Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files podcast, the podcast that limps like a young cat. I'm one of your hosts, John Bruford, joined by your other host, Fenton Costello. Fenton, hello.
Hey, John.
How are we?
I'm not limping. You?
Is that because you've been using your standing desk?
I'm using it right now.
Are you standing?
I am power standing.
Fucking hell, man.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the... What was the evil... Remember Homer got the job in the other nuclear power plant?
Yeah, yeah.
But it ended up being like a Bond villain.
What was his volcano.
Name? What was his name? Can you remember?
Oh, man. If you hadn't asked me that, I would have just known.
I know, you'd have just named it off, right? Not Max Powers. That was when Homer changed.
No, but it was that era.
Go on, Google it really fast.
Oh, come on. Hank Scorpio.
That's it. I'm feeling very Hank Scorpio right now as I just stand here, you know.
Yeah, I can see
it's good.
That.
It's good. It's good. Energy to it.
I Googled Homer's volcano boss.
People complain about Google, but you know what? Nailed it.
Well, what's interesting, the AI overview says Homer does not have a volcano boss, in inverted commas, in The Simpsons. His most well-known boss is Mr. Burns, owner of the Springfield nuclear power plant. And he also briefly worked for the supervillain Hank Scorpio, who had a volcano lair.
There we go. Touché. Educated you.
Yeah, schooled. But yeah, Hank Scorpio, that was a great episode.
One of the best.
Yeah, really was. Really was. So I'm still a bit deaf, unfortunately.
Yeah. Old man stuff, is it?
No. So I went to the doctors and I'm like, am I, you know, really falling apart? And he had a good look in my ears.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, they don't look right. Oh, okay. And gave me some antibiotics.
Good.
Which apparently by tomorrow I should be feeling a little bit better.
Great.
Well, do you know what? It's not ideal. I went on a date last night.
Congrats.
Thanks. And sitting in this pub with this lady, fantastic lady, really lovely. And I couldn't hear a fucking word she was saying. But apparently as well, I was
that
whispering.
That makes you a really good listener. Oh my God, he listened so well. He was great.
He looks though, he's really concentrating on what I'm saying. To the extent, I think he may even have been reading my lips.
I felt heard.
That's it. But I can't lip read, so I had to use Braille.
I'm not talking with my boobs, John.
No, but Fenton, I'm a more mature gentleman, so I don't do that kind of thing.
Good.
But now I couldn't hear much at all. But like I say, apparently I was speaking really quietly because my voice is booming around my head.
Yeah.
But she said I was actually whispering at one point. I'm like, oh, fucking hell.
He's so softly spoken. So gentle.
I'm like, yeah, it's just to get you to lean closer.
Like a honey trap.
Exactly like that.
Get her in your zone of terror.
Oh, I can't wait for this. It's not like painful as such, but it's just so annoying.
I could imagine. Well, I know it's like when you get off a plane and stuff and your ears are blocked, like that's always super annoying. Happens to me a lot.
Yeah. It was weird actually. When I was driving there last night, I went over a couple of hills. And as I was cresting the hill, my ears just cleared. I'm like, oh, this is so good. It's really nice. Oh, yeah. But aging, Fenton, it's not for the faint-hearted.
It's not for everyone. Not for everyone.
Also that. Yeah.
I'm going to go at 28, like all the rock stars.
Yeah, you totally should. You know, burn out bright and young.
Yeah, pretty corpse. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you might have missed that window.
What are you saying?
The pretty cool.
I'll just stand here looking at the big bags under my eyes. What are you on about? I'm fine.
How dare you? Yeah, yeah. So I've been thinking, Fenton.
Oh dear, it's always dangerous. Go on, what have you got?
I've been thinking about our sponsors.
Me too.
See the way I segued into that? It was like,
it's like a fucking, takes hundreds of episodes of practice to get that
hundreds kind of segue. Over 220. It Jesus. Was only really on the 220th that I found my stride. But yes, I have been thinking about them.
Who are our sponsors, John? Who are we going to talk about?
Well, Fintan, the first one I'd like to mention, and these are in no particular order. I'd like to mention Clarion Gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we've been getting ready for ICE, and it's only, what, 3.5 months away?
That reminds me, I need to book a hotel.
Yeah, you do. Mine's already booked.
Yeah, I'm not typing to book my hotel. ICE 2026, Barcelona. Go on. Barcelona.
You're not a details man, are you, Fintan?
I'm not. ICE Barcelona 2026. Right, so we're looking not at me. 19th to the 21st of July.
I'm actually going in. I think I'm going on the Saturday to go and chill for a bit. Chill. Like, that's going to be possible. Not with my work life.
What no date balance. Are we doing the book awards?
Well, that's not confirmed yet.
Ooh.
Because we're still talking to potential sponsors about where.
Ah, okay. That makes sense.
As soon as that's nailed down, we're good.
A bunch of those chats. And then we're looking at 19th to the 21st. Is the 19th like a real day, or is it like one of those like half day bullshit things?
No, it's a real day. And it's also this year it was a longer day than the other 2 days. I think the show was open till 7.
Monday till Wednesday. Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay. Check in 19th. Check out 21st.
Yes, folks, you're hearing this happening live.
Oh.
Fintan is booking a hotel. Probably a top hotel. Executive stay at. Your wife's what she's calling? Oh, yeah, she's calling. He's muted me. That gives me a chance to talk about Clarion Gaming and the ICE event, which is Barcelona, January 19th to 21st. Fintan and I will be there. We'll be hosting the Gambling Book Awards at the event, so we're very, very excited. And we'll be taking our shortlisted authors to go and claim their prizes and to name the winner of the Gambling Book Awards, do a book signing, all kinds of cool shit. Sponsorships for that are available. We're also naming the Gambling Journalist of the Year. You can find details about these things on the www.gamblingbookawards.com site. The Trade Journal of the Year comes with a whopping $4,000 prize. And I think there's two runner-up prizes of £500 each. So, you know, if you're a trade journalist and you're listening to this, or better still, an editor or publisher, get nominating, because we'd like your team to be recognized, etc. Individuals, really, but you know what I'm saying. So that's the beautiful Clarion Gaming sorted. We also have the exceedingly virile, attractive, and fertile Every Matrix, who are delivering advanced turnkey platform technology to the global regulated iGaming and lottery industries with outstanding results. Fintan, did you know that they are powering the world's biggest brands? Did you know that they're solving your biggest challenges?
I did.
Did you know that they're taking your business to the next level? Every Matrix, Fintan. Everything is possible. True story.
I agree.
Yeah. And they're nice as well, which helps.
They're brilliant. No, look, they're really cool guys. They're walking the walk, right? It's easy to say all that stuff. But if you're a operator in any country, they can support you. They've got local offices. They work with tier one operators. They can customize for every market. Full suite of products. They're constantly launching new stuff, content. It's just everything's there. It's just plug it in and go start making some money. It's pretty simple.
Hmm.
Don't overthink it.
Maybe that's where I'm going wrong.
Oh, we could launch a casino.
Well, we have talked about doing like a non-profit casino project before.
We did, didn't we? Years ago. Idealistic. Maybe. Young. There's well, we had somebody with a not a non-profit casino, but we had the that lovely Canadian fellow based in Ireland, We the Bookie.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he does a percentage of your, based on the company profits, gets rebates back to the punters. Which I think is still a fantastic idea.
Genius.
There
are models out there.
Yeah. If he had a bit of marketing budget, I think he'd fucking do smashing.
Man, we could even do like the Gambling Files scholarships.
Scholarships. For what? Well, shit.
When our non-profit is, you know, we've got to find something to do with the profits in our non-profit.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of G6.
What's that?
It's a private jet.
Oh, see, you know what that is, and I don't. Which tells our listeners everything they need to know about.
Well, it's actually a G6000, I think. It's the proper model.
Yeah, number. But you're familiar enough with it to abbreviate it.
G6, yo. Yeah.
Man, there was one of those when I was doing that John Grisham marathon. There was one of his books. He just goes into such great detail about this bloke buying a private jet. And you just know that he'd been private jet shopping. Fuck. It's like that difficult second album, you know. When people record the first album, it's about their struggle, it's about their life, it's about real shit that people can connect to really easily.
I thought that wasn't the whole reason the first albums were better than the second. I thought the first album, you can cherry pick all their best songs.
Oh, and it's usually years in the making.
Yeah, right. And then the second album's done in 6 months in a drunken haze where everyone hates each other.
Not necessarily. It's also that the second album reflects their life changing. And so their source material, themselves, is totally different. And it just ends up being facile bollocks. Often. Not always.
Got it.
But often. I learned something similar. Years ago, recruiting designers for a publishing company I was working at. Fuck knows why the job ended up with me. Like, anyway.
Like graphic designers or like?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So layout people. And on magazines, you've got to be reasonably quick. And we've seen all these designers and they were showing us this wonderful work.
Yeah. And we hired show me what you can do in 10 minutes.
That's it. We hired this dude with this beautiful portfolio. Editorial director comes down. He's like, what the fuck have you saddled me with? What are you talking about? He's terrible. Well, what do you mean? Like, his work's fucking great. So, yeah. He had 2 years to do that. He's laying out a page a day. He should be hitting 10, you know. Shit. So that changed how we did our interview process. It's like, oh, this portfolio is great. The computer over there.
Always got to do the practical test. Always got to do the practical test. It's too easy to say the right shit. I'll optimize your this and I'll lower your CPCs and I'll increase your FTDs. And da, 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 da.
Yeah, nobody ever said those things.
A-B test the shit out of it. And very data-led. And yeah, it's easy to do buzzword bingo.
Those sentences have never occurred in an interview I've done.
Fair enough.
I did have one guy, fuck, who withdrew from the consideration for the position he was going for because of all the swearing in the interview.
That's fine. It's just good self-selection, that. This isn't for you, mate.
Well, no, I said when I was told, I said, well, he sounds like a wanker. But no, so seriously, like publishing is sweary. It's like, you know, going into the Royal Navy and complaining that some people swore.
It's full of gays.
And I don't like boats. You know, it's like, it's a really strange thing. But anyway, what do I know?
I talked to somebody recently who wanted to join the Navy when they were a teenager. And I'm looking at them like, don't you get seasick? And I went, yeah, I didn't really think it through. Can't remember who it was. Anyway.
That's bizarre. People are strange.
Indeed.
You should have joined the RAF, but then there's some real twats in the RAF.
There is. Fucking stick jockeys. Home for tea. Fuck's sake.
But we haven't mentioned our third and final sponsor, Fintan.
We haven't mentioned our third and final sponsor. Sorry, now, I'm just getting my third.
Yeah, the only read I've got for them is out of date.
Look, OptiMove, gambling industry's biggest CRM platform, used by the majority of the EGR Power 50 and way more. But it's not just the big guys. They've got product offerings for small, medium companies, startups. Anybody can plug in. Data is data. So if you've got small data, you've got big data, they can handle it. They've been doing it for years. They've been doing AI before it was cool, before it was on trend. They will optimize the life out of your CRM, help you improve retention rates, conversion rates, lifetime values, protect your players. It's all there, plug and play. Bunch of experts, they've seen it all. There's nothing you've got that's going to surprise them or shock them or they can't handle. There'll be a link below to get the demo. Go for it.
I think you've hit every salient point in there, Fintan. That's super. Congratulations. A couple of eagle-eared listeners have written in to say that after I announced the relaunch and new sexy things on our website, that hasn't actually appeared yet. And I'd like to say that they are very, very wise and observant listeners. And maybe it's there by the time this episode.
Or maybe I put John on a pip. Who knows?
What's a pip?
Oh, a pip, right. So a pip is one of those really wanky HR management things. It's short for a performance improvement plan, right? Mm. So in some countries, it can be really hard to sack people. So what you have to do is you have to, as a management or as a company, you have to demonstrate that you've done everything in your power to help the person before you sack them. So you put them on a pip. And basically, the pip, the second you get put on a pip, you know, like, you're gone. This is now just paperwork. That's the pip. So, like, we sit down together, we go through the issues, we put a plan in place, you then get measured against that plan, you get your feedback about hitting the plan, get another meeting. So, like, 2-3 meetings, and then, whoosh.
Can we just agree on gardening leave?
You don't have a garden.
I do. It's a do fucking you? Mess. I got put on gardening leave once.
Oh, I've never got gardening leave. I'd love it.
I've only had it one time, and unfortunately it wasn't a particularly good paying job. But it was really funny because I found out later why I got put on gardening leave. Because my 12 months was coming up, and in British law, British employment law, certainly at that time, if they wanted me out, they had to do it before I hit 12 months.
Mm. Right?
And I had rescued this business in so many ways. It was unreal. Like, I rescued their whole fucking launch party for a new magazine. I rescued the new magazine. This new magazine, like, I was there to basically production edit, sub edit, or whatever, deputy edit. I did the whole picture desk. I laid out over a third of it myself. I wrote almost a third of it. I did the whole picture desk, all the picture editing. Seriously, did friggin' everything on this thing. Total burnout.
Is this why the website's not live?
Fucking nightmare, right?
Fucking 3 articles, man.
and then this the owner of the company, like, he calls a company meeting, everybody's in this room, and he goes, right, well, we're gonna have the launch party next week, but we're not gonna have the magazine at the launch party because we're obviously not going to make deadline. And I'm like, and I just put my hand up, I said, hold on a second. You say that if we miss it, you don't say it beforehand because we still have time to do this. Hmm. You know, this could still happen. And don't be standing there and giving me all this defeatist shit.
Hmm.
rally us. Anyway, that didn't go down as well as you might think.
Really? Being called out in front of the entire company.
Oh. Yeah.
Who would have thought, eh?
Yeah, but I got the magazine finished in time and we went to the launch party with printed copies.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's how you did it.
Seriously, no pat on the back. No, fucking hell, you really pulled that one out. None of that shit. So what happened was apparently the editor, who's kind of like an editor in chief, and the owner, they thought I was going to beat them up.
That story.
So they got to my just before my 12 months, and they were like, yeah, you should probably fuck off now.
You're trouble. Get out. Sling your hook.
But when I found out, I said to them later, I said, of course I wasn't going to beat you up. If I was going to beat you up, I'd have just beaten you up. It's not something I would have planned or would have brewed. It would be a spur of the moment thing.
I know what you're thinking. This is the guy who's got his Barcelona hotel booked. Job done. Sorted.
Somebody just did that for you, didn't they?
For sure.
You fucking twat. But congratulations.
It's the one with the it's the one with the roof bar and the roof swimming pool thingy and the nice views of the city.
Great. I don't even know where mine is. I just plotted it to be near a McDonald's. So, listen, the guest on this episode, it is a returning guest and one of my personal favourites and one of the best journalists reporting on the gambling industry, Howard Stutz.
Mm.
So Howard works, he was a long time at the Las Vegas Review Journal. Now he is at the Nevada Independent, and they're doing really, really solid work. I really like their stuff. Howard's still doing brilliant work. But we got Howard in to talk about Vegas and kind of the perception of value. Vegas no longer being a value destination. It always used to be good value. You could find good value, and I'm just not feeling that anymore.
It's definitely the online commentary is, you know, Vegas is empty or it's only for VIPs now. That is very much the narrative on the web.
But Vegas is the definitive mass market. Absolutely definitive. It's proof that volume works.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're finding, you know, the working class being squeezed out yet again.
Yet again. Fuck.
Over people flying in with their G6s. God. Yeah, we need to start that non-profit casino because I know what we can do with some of the profits.
I fucking know exactly what we're going to do with it. We're getting NetJet cards, baby.
Yeah, but you know what we could have done?
What?
Oh, I know he's left there now, hasn't he? White Label Casinos, dude. Phil.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he left. Yeah, he left.
But we could have done a White Label thing with Phil.
Oh, we just call up Evermatrix. Oh, we're not tier one. We call up Evermatrix. They'll take care of us. Be fine.
Okay. But what if we need to analyze the data in the back end?
Evermatrix.
Can we use Optimove for some CRM stuff, though?
It integrates with Evermatrix.
Okay, well. But what if we needed to publicize it at an industry event?
We'd call Clarion.
Holy shit.
Full stack, baby. Full stack.
Wow. It's like the baby, you know, Jesus created us.
But what it highlights is, obviously, Evermatrix has payment processing. But, you know, from a sponsor perspective, we do have room for a payment processor. Just throwing that out there. Send out the vibes.
Good champ.
Well, look, you know, there's definitely people, I know for a fact, there's people who've listened to this who've taken Evermatrix skins and opened Optimove accounts. So it does work.
Brilliant.
It does work.
Well, look, we should probably get on to Howard now.
Let's do it. Howard's great. Big fan.
Yeah, he's a top man. And
look, yeah. And topical as well. Everyone will be just back from G2A. So perfect
time. Yeah, yeah. And they'll be like, yeah, it was really expensive. They're right. We should follow up with their sponsors, because if they were right about that, then they're probably right about the rest of it.
Everything.
Exactly. And and the big CEOs, Denise, thanks for listening, will be saying, look up a G6 for me, would you, to their assistants.
She'll have a 747 or something like that.
I don't think she will. I don't think she will either.
I think she
probably stays pretty humble. Yeah, relatively.
It's just helicopter.
But anyway, I was told definitively that she won't be coming on the podcast.
Definitively. I've told you, stop fucking emailing me. The barring order says, clearly, no contact.
Yeah, but I'm only like just a little bit over an hour from Stoke. So I just keep thinking, well, I'll just pop over, see if she's around. But it turns out the porter cabin in the Stoke City Grounds, it's not there anymore. No, they've got offices now.
Beautiful offices.
Well, they built just a whole. They'd still be in the porter cabin for old time's sake.
No, they built a whole the whole park, kind of massive offices and super top of the range stuff.
All right, yep. So I bet they've got high speed internet.
Bet they do, John. Bet their internet's better than your internet.
Oh, man, it's coming though. I'm going to get it. So going to get it. Anyway, Howard, we are joined by this week's guest or this episode. Yeah, probably this week's guest. And I've been trying to set this up for a little while, but you know, people are busy. We're joined by return. No, that's not a dig at you, Fintan, that you are very busy. returning guest, which is always a good sign. Or the sign, a sign of somebody who's got too much time in their hands. Little from column A, little from column B. But senior reporter from the Nevada Independent, Mr. Howard Stutz. Howard, possibly my favorite journalist in all of gamblingdom.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. It's very nice of you to say. And it's actually very early out here, just a little after 7 a.m. Pacific time. So
I'm so sorry.
I always see this as the major, like people talk about like the difference between, say, America and Europe. This is the big difference. Nobody in Europe would do a 7 a.m. meeting.
It's very true.
It's just like, that's not happening. I'm having my croissant and my cigarette.
Well, I got my coffee, so I'm ready. So whatever you guys
good stuff. Doing. Good stuff.
I thought you say that, Fintan. I've got an 8 o'clock scheduled for the morning.
Good for you. I've got to get my son to the pool for his training at 6 a.m. He's got to be in the pool for 6 a.m.
Yeah, but dude, that's not work.
Fucking feels like it at 5:30.
I'm recording what I'm doing tomorrow, 8 o'clock. I'm recording something for our brand new podcast that we haven't announced anywhere yet.
Ooh, teaser!
I know, right?
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty exciting. It's an academic from a university in Hong Kong.
No spoilers. No spoilers.
You never guess what it's about, anyway. Never. Yes, we're doing a podcast on sexual perversions.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah.
Our first guest.
It's like a rogues gallery.
Well, actually, somebody that we've talked about on this podcast, Professor Mark Griffiths, who's like, I don't know if you're aware of him, Howard, but he's at a British university, but all of the major studies on addictions and gambling addictions, he's done most of him and Dr. Michael Auer, who's also been on the podcast a few times. And in that field, I mean, he's just amazing. And I was talking to Maris Catania, and she said, have you seen Mark's new book? And I'm like, what is it? And she's like, oh, you've got to get this. And it is an A to Z of sexual perversions.
I wasn't sure where you were going to go with this. Well, I'm glad I finished the book.
We are in the middle of Responsible Gaming Month in the U.S. You know, the American Gaming Association is always the month of September, so it talks about responsible gaming and you know the ways to you know all these companies have embraced it. You know, it's always an issue still, but it's you know it's always kind of brought up. So I'll throw that in for you there, John. How's that?
Appreciate that.
Thanks helps for bringing keep us me back on topic, Harry.
I was going to say, helps keep me on
that's
topic.
That's the professional journalism kicking in of just watching you flounder, John. He's just like, hey, I'm just going to throw this rope out and you grab that.
It's honestly, it's like being at the feet of Jesus.
A little Cirque du Soleil here.
So Howard, right? So the article that made me ask you back on was one that you did. I'm going to see if I can check the date on this one. This was August 30th. Okay, That can't be right. August 31st. I thought it was much longer ago than that. And it's basically, it's a controversial headline. It says, headlines say Vegas is dead. What's actually going on is more complicated, right?
Right.
Now, there's a part in this article, and it's where the guy, and we haven't had anybody from this organization on the podcast, and I'm not dissing them, but I do think what this chap is quoted as saying is a little bit disingenuous. It's when the chap says about how, Joe, I'm going to find the quote, just bear with me. So it is, I can find it. I can totally find it. I mean, it's only a really long article. Oh my God, what was I thinking? Saying that I could find something in this is fucking, it's about 2,000 words. Oh, fuck. what's that? Is it UN?
Is the quote from Steve Hill?
Possibly.
Okay.
Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority CEO, yeah. Steve Hill doesn't believe in the narrative that Vegas is expensive. And he says, don't just believe what you read. Go and do a little bit of work. Call a travel agent. Call on the property. See what the price of Las Vegas really is, rather than some general headline that, frankly, is not accurate. Now, I was looking at coming over for G2E, right? Because mm-hmm. I've got some air miles. And I thought, I can use those, pay the taxes. Cost me about 350 quid for a return flight that way. I can just about soak that up. And I start looking around and I reach out to a couple of people I know. And even the media rates, people are embarrassed to share them. That's how high the room rates are. I went to, off property, little place, Ellis Island. Right. And I know Ellis Island's refurbed, but yeah. We are not talking a premier property and we are not talking a premier location. Staying there Sunday night to Friday morning, I think. They wanted nearly $1,000. There's no Friday or Saturday night in that, right? That's a lot.
It's been this way, I think, the last few years. And it's since after the pandemic and people started coming back to Vegas. Vegas popped up really, it recovered so quickly after the pandemic. It was nothing like the recession. That's one of the things we've been talking about. Is in this downturn, it's so different from the recession. It took all the way past the pandemic for Vegas to recover from the recession. That's how bad it hit our market. But there was just such an influx, so many things going on, and I think a lot of this, people were paying the high prices because they were willing to, whatever it was. Now, yeah. there's been a bit of squeezing the economy here in the U.S. And that's affecting the travel markets. And then at the same time, people don't want to travel as it is, or, international travel has been down, which is, especially from Canada. But they kept the prices up. So that's something that they're looking at. And they came out with this ad campaign in the last couple of weeks. And it was a really good ad. I mean, it was clever with the music and the woman, they had hit all the high points of Vegas, but they didn't address the issue of price. They didn't of value. And that's the biggest concern we have now. Bottom line is hotel room rates are down compared to a year ago, but then again, visitation's down too. Go ahead. Look at your question, John.
It's really pissing me off seeing people compare room rates to a year ago. Don't compare them to a year ago when we're on the back of 50 fucking months of 1 billion plus. Compare them to 2019.
Right.
Comparing them to last year is just, it's completely false.
And they're up compared to, they're up compared to 2019. Definitely.
Well, yeah, because they were still too high in 2024. Yeah. Like, they might be down compared to 2024, but that's down on a period when they were still too high.
And I think there's also, you also remember they took about 5,000 rooms offline. In 2024, between the Tropicana and the Mirage going away. So that reduces the number of rooms you have. The high-end events that come in now, Formula One, but that only impacts a certain small segment of the market, the Wynns and the Venetians and MGMs, then Caesars, they can jack up the rates all they want because they got their big customers coming in for Formula One. But then you also have these weekends now, the Raiders have a football game on Sunday after Formula One. There's all these events their people are coming, but you have to really do the price shopping. And I think Steve Hill, what he's trying to say is, yeah, go through travel agents, see if they can find the different deals and this and that. I don't know. You know, I think he was just taken a little back by the question from somebody that asked in this press conference, you know, the rates are still high. They are high. We know that. We know part their people have been, Vegas was, everything was always free. And, remember when MGM announced, I mean, it was like more than a decade ago, that they were going to charge for parking on the strip at their hotels. My friend Steve Sibelius, who was a columnist of the Review Journal at the time where we both worked, said he wrote that it's like they opened the gates of hell and the apocalypse, and people, you know, it was like all, you know, the fire and flames, because people went crazy. You never charged for parking. Now there are very few properties that have free parking on the strip. I mean, only a couple, Treasure Island. You know.
That was the start of something, though. And that was the start of the point at which people started to feel gouged. Because you turn up, the room rate is, it's like when Europeans shop in America and you do that stupid fucking thing where the sales tax is added when you get to the till. Like, just put the fucking price on the thing.
That's what they're doing also, because you have resort fees. You know, that's
resort fees.
That is the big thing, yeah.
Resort fees, parking. The cost of food has gone through the roof. And high room rates. And all of those things come together. If people aren't feeling they're going to get a value, here's another thing, right? Here's another thing. So, and in fact, it's in this article. And I'm not criticizing your article in the slightest. I remain a huge fan. I'm not sure if it's this article or another one that I read recently, but it was talking about there was an 8% drop in visitation to Vegas in July. That's like 2 million people. That's massive, right? And then saying over one of the American holidays, they're expecting a drop of like
Labor Day. 5% drop.
So it's not massive. But that's the difference between an American visitor and international visitors, because international visitors are more likely to come in July, and you can't compare a singularly American holiday to the, because that 8% drop is, if your business suffered an 8% drop, people would be predicting it was going to fold the next day. You know, I mean, that's massive. That's a big deal.
Yeah. It's, go ahead. I mean, but it's just, I was getting on the point also, resort, we talked about resort fees, which are everywhere in the hotel. I mean, I went to Sacramento in Northern California to cover the Athletics. I stayed at this like a small, like a Homes to Suite, I think they're called. It's like a Hilton. They had like a $20 resort fee on it. And I was like, really? It was mainly for parking, if I wanted to use their gym, which I didn't. But it was kind of weird. And the free breakfast that they give you. I mean, it was just, that's what I've tried to tell people. Yeah. Resort fees are here to stay. They're not going away. It's just now Resorts World tried this summer, because they needed to do all the bad headlines they've gotten over the year. They needed to do something bring people in. So they, free parking, no resort fee, all this stuff. Now they just went back to resort fees, and they just went back to charge for parking for out-of-town visitors. If you're a local, you know, with Nevada plates, yeah, you get to park for free. So it's something that they've never been criticized this way over time. That's what's so funny. They have never had this type of criticism on Vegas. But you can criticize Vegas for a lot of things, but you never criticized them for not being a value and not an overcharge.
That's the word.
That's
value is the word. Vegas right now, there's loads going on. Yeah, great, brilliant. Room rates have been taxed to pay for the Allegiant Stadium, for fuck's sake.
Right, that's a room tax. Yeah, it's the extra room tax that they added.
You know, it's people have been paying for these things to happen.
Yeah.
But it's not value.
Well, then you look at this. I have a little item that's in my newsletter for tomorrow. The Sphere, they announced yesterday that they've sold 65 million. Wizard of Oz the movie they're showing, you know, on the big, you know, the whole interactive Winter Wizard of Oz film that they've done, they've redone and put it in the Sphere. They sold $65 million in ticket sales since this started. It's not cheap. We're going to go in December. I have a cousin coming into town for his birthday with his wife, and my wife and I are going to go with him. We decided, well, let's go. We all wanted to see the movie on a weekday in December. And we're paying a little under $200 per ticket for it. I've been curious about it to see what this is like. I'm telling you, you've seen the Sphere, right, John? You know, you've seen the images of it with all the,
everything.
The inside, I've been there for the Postcards from the Earth movie. That was very good. It was like about $100 to see it. It was okay. It was a good movie. It just, which gets, you know, you have the whole surround with the, you know, it's just, you know, the elephants and the lions are walking on top of you and stuff. It's amazing. The Wizard of Oz is the same way. We went to one concert there. My wife and I went and saw Kenny Chesney. I ended up getting free tickets, and my nephew couldn't go, so he sent them to me. He's like, Kenny Chesney's a country star here in the U.S. It's an amazing show, and with the videos and everything. So, but they really overpriced on U2, yet people came to it, and they sold out all those tickets. The Eagles are back there, so it's these types of, and it's a non-gaming venue. There's no gaming involved. The only attachment to gaming, it's on the land that's owned by the Sands people, the former Sands Corporation. You have to walk through a lot of times the Venetian to get to it.
But what do people get pissed off about with the Sphere? What's the most common gripe apart from ticket prices? It's parking.
Parking. The parking is like $50 at the Sphere. There's some parking around. Most people are Uber over now. I mean, that's one of the things we've seen, the big change in Vegas. People Uber everywhere.
But the parking rates all around it and its own park. I mean, everywhere all around it. There's a show on. Oh, we didn't realize. Yeah. Sorry. Give us more.
Parking is an issue, especially if you were a longtime Vegas visitor. You came here and you were used to, you know, come from Southern California, drive up or wherever. You used to come in and park for free, and now you can't do that. A lot of the talk was MGM decided to put the paid parking at the Grand because a lot of locals were parking there and then taking a cab over to the airport because it was free to park at MGM. and the airport parking was, you know, was like, you know, whatever, $20 a day or something. So that's part of the reason they did that.
I quite like that. Yeah. Do casino employees have to pay for parking?
No.
When I was at, I'm trying to think. I was staying at Bill's. So that tells you how long ago that was. I'm pretty sure I was staying at Bill's, and my room was looking out the back of the building, and I'm pretty sure
Bill's Casino? It's now the Cromwell, and soon to become the Vanderpump. Soon to become the Vanderpump.
And I enjoyed Bill's a lot, but I was looking out the back, and it looked out onto the Wynn staff car park,
right?
Which is, I think, bigger than the town I'm sitting in.
Do you ever been to Macau?
Yeah.
I went to Macau. When first year we went to Macau back in 07, we laughed because there was the employee parking lot was like this roped off, fenced off area for motor scooters because they all ride motor scooters around Macau, and that's how the employees got to work. That was employee parking.
You ever got the bus in Macau?
Yeah. It's been a long time since I've been to Macau. I was there in 07.
So. Get a bus whenever you go. It is one of those things where you're like, I survived that. They should sell T-shirts saying, I went to Macau, got a bus, and I didn't die.
The interesting thing with during the Formula One, they have to they had to figure out ways to shuttle in parking their employees. You know, when I went to the first year of the race, I parked at the Rio to walk over to MGM because it just seemed like it was going to be blocked off. I didn't want to try it. So I parked at the Rio, which is off the strip about a mile up Flamingo. Caesars at the time owned the Rio, and that's where they were using. They were using the back parking lot there. All the employees were parking there, and they were busing them to all the different properties from there. So it was the challenge that they had during Formula One.
That must have been a logistical nightmare.
Can I ask a question about the numbers? Just so I can understand. So, you know, the narrative or kind of the story out of Las Vegas for since COVID has been like record high after record high, and it's just unbeatable machine. And now it's down, but it's obviously down versus historical things have never been better. We're talking like what, 5 to 8%?
Visitation is down. This is the first year visitation is down. It's probably going to be a decline this year, and it's down. It's down by what, 7% right now through July. Gaming revenues are odd. They're actually up on strip compared to a year ago, which was down a little bit from 2024 was down a little bit from 2023, but the state was on a last year was like 50, what was it? I can't remember now. The strip was up, what was $8.9 billion in gaming revenue. That was like the all-time high, and it's gone down a little bit. So the interesting thing is gaming members are still doing well. Now, in July, the big reason was Baccarat, high-end Baccarat play went through the roof because the hold percentage was almost like over 17%, which was, you know, unheard of. So the players just got killed on Baccarat. But then they could come. But then another. But if you
talk about swing back, right?
Yeah. So that, yeah, you guys know how Baccarat is. It could fluctuate any which way. You see big Baccarat play in November during F1. Well, you know, in New Year and obviously Chinese New Year and all these different holidays that attract a lot of the foreign visitors. So international visitors. Okay. So we'll, yeah, it's gaming numbers are okay. It's really the visitation, room rates, all associated with that are down.
Yeah.
It's a concern because non-gaming revenue is much higher than gaming revenue in Las Vegas.
It.
Yeah. That includes all your restaurants, you know, your hotel rooms, the shows, shopping, all the non-gaming revenue. That's up much. That's down a little bit from a year ago. That's the drop that concerns.
But it's down versus historical, like, it's we've never had it so good type thing. Okay.
Yeah, it's just down from the last few years, which was you know, ridiculous.
And there's lots of obviously fees is one thing, you know, like we've talked about resort fees, room tax, food's expensive, car parking, etc. And then a lot of the narrative is around like there's not a lot of, you know, traffic from Canada is down or traffic from Mexico is down. How real, like, you know, like there's a lot going on in the media, like as somebody on the ground, like what's realistic here? And is that like how big an impact is that?
It's well, Canada is definitely down because, and it's not because of tariffs or economy. It's they hate Trump. They're pissed off at what he said. I wrote something back in March about the Canadian visitors not coming, and I got phone calls from and emails from Canadian. I have relatives in Toronto, you know, and I had phone calls. They were like, no, we're not mad about this. They said when Trump said we should be the 51st state and we should be annexed, they were angry. In fact, the Canadian Gaming Association, there was actually a ban on purchasing U.S. slot machines over the tariffs. That was a huge that was a huge hiccup. Now, we got, as you mentioned, G2E's coming. I'm going to be curious to see if the Canadians show up for G2E. The Canadian delegation is usually pretty large for Global Gaming Expo because this is where they do a lot of their business, you know, for both, you know, casinos and their lottery, you know, the Canadian lottery, all the different provincial lotteries. So I'm going to see if that's going to be a question to see what the international crowd is like. But if Canadian, what it is, if it's down about 18%. When you look at the airlines that fly direct to from have direct flights from Canada to Las Vegas, they're down about 18% in passenger volume.
Mm-hmm.
It's not when you look at the overall number of Las Vegas visitors, which is like, 41 million visitors last year. You're talking about almost less than a million visitors. So it's
that's what I'm saying. Like it's easy to say, oh, it's because of the Canadians, but in real numbers, so much of Vegas is internal it's domestic travel, right?
It's domestic travel. You have international still coming. International is right now down compared to a year ago. That's probably because some of the Canadian, there's some, you know, from flights, I think the UK and other parts of Europe, people aren't traveling to the US. There's these high visa fees that have all of a sudden are being attached. I've read about through the, you know, US travel is fighting them, but you know, there's a lot of outside issues outside of Vegas that are causing some of these dips in international travel, but it's still not, you're right. It's mainly the domestic market that's causing the decline of visitation.
That's you've touched on something that I do want to talk about, but I want to drop something in just in case anybody from Resorts World is listening to this episode.
John needs a room for G2E.
No. All I was thinking is that if they want to get people back, forget the resort fees, forget the parking, all that. Just offer free laundry services.
Your resorts, are you coming for G2E or you don't know yet?
No, I couldn't justify the ROI because I figured if it's going to cost me $1,000 to just sleep.
Yeah.
and food, like last time I was there was 2022 maybe. And I was with the publisher of the magazine I was working on at the time. And right. Like breakfast for two in a nondescript property, not high end by any stretch of the imagination, eating at a bar, not in a nice restaurant, steak and eggs, usual shit. Was over $100 for two people.
Yeah, we talked in that story that you were mentioning. We talked to a woman, a couple of my younger reporters. They went out on the strip and found they did a great job.
Disgruntled people.
Yeah, they ran out and talked to everybody. They talked to this woman who talked. They're a family from I think they're from Michigan, and she said she took her two daughters who were underage, so they couldn't drink. But she had one glass of wine. They went to Hell's Kitchen at Caesar's, and for the three of them, it was almost over $450 for the meal. And she said, "I only had one glass of wine. It wasn't like we were, you know, drinking bottles of alcohol. It was ridiculous." So
that's a Ramsay restaurant, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah, the Hell's Kitchen, the Gordon Ramsay restaurant. He's got restaurants all over, you know, Caesar's properties. So it's the word's out there that there's these issues, and people are starting to. You know, it just keeps on building. And I don't know how, you know, the convention's already coming out with a whole other, they're doing all these campaign hits, you know, about fabulous Las Vegas. You know, they freshened up the rideshare pickup or meeting area at Reed Airport, at the airport.
Yay.
Yeah. They've done, there's things they're doing, but I don't know, you know, it's getting a lot of attention locally. I don't know if it's getting the attention they want. To try to get people back. And I don't know. I'm not part of the convention authority. I can't, I don't advise them. I just.
It's a really interesting question. Like, is it a deliberate strategy of just, we want higher spend clients?
Like, I don't.
We want people who don't care about dropping $400 in a meal.
Well, I think people were spending whatever they wanted over the last, right after the pandemic and in the years following, they were spending the money. Now, all of a sudden, we've hit a bit of an economic bump. And I'm sure more bump.
Okay.
And that's what, and they, you know, all of a sudden they still got these out there and it's like, oh God, okay. They're addressed. They're trying to figure it out. It's not up to the convention authority to figure this out. It's up to Caesars Entertainment, MGM Resorts. Sure. Between them, they have 10 strip properties. They drive the rates on because they have on, it's not like Wynn that just has two high end resorts or Venetian, the two high end resorts. MGM and Caesars run the gamut from, you know, smaller, you know, I guess not, I wouldn't say, you know, middle market properties to the high end properties like Bellagio. I mean, they run the gamut and they're the ones that have got to figure out how to make this work. So it works for the rest of the market. So
Vegas has always been so good at, you know, if people aren't there, they can't spend any money.
Yeah.
And they've always been really good at just getting people there. And they've always been. We had Richard Marcus on a couple of episodes ago. Do you know Richard? He's a table games protection guy, but he used to be.
Yeah, I know the name. Yeah.
Advantage player.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, you know, in any conversation about table games at the moment, the blackjack odds in Vegas always come up. You know, is it 6-5 now? Mm-hmm. Fucking hell. All the places to squeeze people, but also, you know, Golden Nugget's just taken the dealer tables out and they've replaced them with automated tables.
Yeah, that's Derek Stevens did that. At the Golden Gate. Exactly. Yeah.
Golden Gate. Sorry. Thank you. That's really interesting. And that you're going to see that replicated loads of different places because $5 blackjack is a losing deal. No casino can make money on $5 blackjack. It's just not economically viable, especially with, you know, I mean, and I'm not certainly not criticizing the deals the unions did with the casinos because that was long overdue. You can't have all these businesses saying, hey, we made over $1 billion last month. No, I'm sorry, there's no pay rises for you. but it's you know, you're going to see more of that automation to keep those loss leading games that get bums on seats. But I say that realizing at the same time that hardly anywhere is dealing $5 blackjack anymore anyway.
No, I think maybe up in rural Nevada, maybe, but it's, you know, most, and even, you know, I didn't look that closely in California, but the tribal casino, yeah, there's not $5 blackjack at those big tribal casinos anywhere. You know, it's interesting when you talk about Vegas. I wish you were coming because I would take you out. Have you been to any of the Station Casinos properties or the Boyd properties? The neighborhood casinos are doing well. They're doing fine. The Las Vegas locals properties.
I went to a Station buffet a long time ago, and I've been out to Red Rock, which is fantastic.
Yeah. I live 5 minutes from the Red Rock, and Durango is a mini version of the Red Rock, and it's doing a gang, but it's only got 200 rooms. It's just, and it's packed. They're doing things the right way to locals, for locals, and they're still, and locals don't go to the strip. I mean, we go to the strip maybe for an event or for, you know, something special. Downtown is really trying to push that, what the locals do. I mean, Derek went to Derek, you know, it's got Circa's a gold mine for him, but he's also got the D and he's also got the Golden Gate, as you mentioned. I don't know if he's going to take away the dealers out of the D at some point and put the electronic blackjack tables there. Golden Gate's much smaller, very small property, so it's probably easier to do it that way there. But it's, you know, there's a real big difference, you know, when you talk about the strip, but then you look out into the locals markets, things are going well for them. So,
but is it a case of, you know, as if like, okay, let's say there's a structural decline in the strip, then the locals start losing their jobs.
Well, yeah, that's the big question. You lose, you know, a job, right. Jobs become there's not layoffs. I mean, there may be downsizing a little bit, to move, you know, and then bring people back in the busier months when things kick in this month, because we're starting to see, you know, we've had, you know, we have more events now at Allegiant. We just had the boxing match there that drew 70,000 to Allegiant Stadium. It was packed this weekend in town because of that. And then the Raiders played last night, the Raiders played the Chargers last night. So, but you also have, the conferences are coming, big conventions are coming back. You know, I mentioned G2E, but there are other big trade shows and conferences coming back throughout the year. So that's where, you know, if people lost their job, they're getting them back, you know.
Which is kind of like, if you look at if you track the CEOs, kind of, they've all had their quarterly calls and things. And obviously it's a big question from analysts. And
yeah.
I think it was Hornbuckle was saying like, look, we're fully, like our outlook for the rest of the year is we're full.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like super bullish of like, look, the conventions are coming. We're booked.
Mm-hmm.
This is a blip.
I think they were taken surprised by the drop off in visitation that people did decide, you know, they want to try, you know, they were slow to react to it. Now they're trying, now they're trying to react to it. And so maybe, it may be a little too late for this to save things for
this year, but we can get it next. We'll get them next year. And realistically, once you've spent your summer at home in Canada, like next year, you want to get away, right?
Yeah.
you can only do that so often.
You know, the Vegas Golden Knights, the NHL team, you know, starting to play in October. Yeah. Canadians, I mean, they travel with their, because they usually make a trip. say the Toronto Maple Leafs are coming here, they'll also go to Los Angeles, or they'll, you know, or the Bay Area, and then come, or now maybe Utah, because the Arizona team moved to Salt Lake City, but then they come in Vegas also, and so I'm curious to see if the Canadians are going to still travel and follow the NHL teams like they have in the past.
Something that you touched on earlier that was quite interesting, and I wanted to ask you if it's developed at all. It was those proposed international tourist fees and bonds. Has that gone anywhere? Is that likely to happen? Because that's going to fucking cripple.
They've been approved, but I don't know if they're being implemented. That's where it's at right now. I mean, that's a better question really to ask for the U.S. Jeff Freeman of the U.S. Travel. I think they're fighting them, but it's not sure if they've been approved yet or how that's working. I don't know the answer to that. That's a good question, because with World Cup next year, you know, you've got, they're already putting tickets away. I think are the queue to try to, you know, put your name in for tickets next year. Vegas would probably, you know, we're not going to host one of the games, any of the games, but they'll be, it's in LA. They'll be in I think in Dallas, the Cowboys, they'll be in Seattle.
For sure. Like, if you're going to America to watch the games, watch some of the World Cup stuff, you're going to try and stick Vegas on your itinerary. Yeah.
Well, that's just the typical international traveler. You're not coming here just to Vegas, or just, they go to the Grand Canyon, they go to Hollywood, they go to San Francisco. You know, Vegas is part of the stops. You're right. So that's what, yeah, we're going to get offshoot from that, even though we're not hosting one of the games.
Could you imagine if the Sphere, those like broadcasts and stuff, like what that'd be like?
They'll do all the sports books will show them. You know, we'll get, you know, all the, you know, there's a couple of different British pubs in Vegas, and they all have their different, you know, either one showing Arsenal, one showing another team. So, you know, they have their fan base. So they'll all show them. That's it. Listen, it's going to be big for the books to have the World Cup on. Mm.
You know, Aria. You know, they've got the big Henry Moore sculpture out the side there. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? There was an English pub there,
right?
Looking out on the Henry Moore sculpture, and like,
right? I don't think the pub's there anymore.
Oh, that's a shitter, because Vince, yeah. Like, I don't know if it's the same. I don't know if there are any Irish sculptures like this, but like, if an English person sees a Henry Moore sculpture, they'll go, "Oh, that's a Henry Moore sculpture."
Yeah,
there are a few things more English.
I'm so uncultured. I thought the statue was of Henry Moore, but you're saying it's made by Henry Moore. And Henry Moore is a famous English sculptor.
Very, very, and very distinctive style. And the statue there, I mean, the sculpture there is fucking unreal. It's amazing. But I was in that English pub the one day, right? And I don't think Ari had even been open that long. And I went in. And behind the bar, they had a sign that said, it was something like, if you can sink your pint in 8 seconds or less, it's free. What? I know, right? And I said
eight
to the
seconds.
I said to the barman, like, you don't get many English people in here, do you?
That's a slow pint.
I'm like, I could drink half, draw a picture of it, and then finish it in your 8 seconds.
I actually got a question for you guys. Is that when? What is the little casino they bought in London?
It's Crockford's.
Is it opened? Is Wynn running it now? Have you guys heard?
I believe so.
That's the business for UAE for their.
Yeah, the way they're talking about it is it's just right. It's just right, because the there's been a massive decline. So London used to be, it was I think 20 at one point 28 casinos within like 3 square miles in the center of London, most of which were high end, or you know, a large proportion of which were high end, and almost all the high end ones are gone. And Crockford's is, you know, one of the last holdouts. I went for dinner there once. Fuck me.
I don't think it's open really yet. Good. I think it's...
Did they not? Has it not just been kept open?
No, I think they've shut it down.
I haven't been to London since 2016, so I'm...
They're probably going to renovate it. If they bought it, they're probably going to renovate it.
Oh, man, it's beautiful in there. It is absolutely... Not bad. It's, well, but the idea of using it...
They're using it to draw business for the UAE and
as a London funnel.
Well, it's a follow the sun thing as well, right? So you've got your Middle East, London? You've got your well, if you think of trading, right? It's a good kind of middle between Asia and America, London, in terms of just time zones, but also travel.
Well, yeah, you can get to London from anywhere pretty much, can't you?
Yeah.
But I think it's very smart because they got it for next to nothing as well. So it's like, yeah, I can totally see how that fits in with their plan. I mean, you compare it to, the Wynn's results are always like, they always make me smile because they've recognized their niche. They've got six properties now?
Yeah, well, they got the two in Macau and three in Macau. And then...
three in Macau now. So maybe it's seven Macau, properties.
Two in Vegas, Boston, and Boston.
Yeah.
Boston National Harbor.
Let's throw London in as well.
Do they have seven? Do they have one in Singapore?
No, that's only Sands and Resorts World in Singapore. Sorry.
But then you've got Ras Al Khaimah come in down the line as well. So when that opens, that'll be eight properties and they will be among the very biggest operators in the world off eight properties.
It's curiosity right now with Wynn, because Elaine passed away, sadly, just recently. But what happens?
Oh, you did a great piece on her, didn't you?
She was one of the most remarkable individuals I ever met. And she's very classy. I talked to her off. I did a story about her former executive assistant who left and went to work for the Petitas, and she retired. And I did a story on her. And I talked to Elaine about her executive assistant. But she talked to me a little bit about Steve, all completely on background. She was amazing. But what happens with her stock? And Tilman Fertitta now owns 13% of the company. Or I think it's about 13%, but he's over in Italy as the U.S. ambassador. Yeah. And all his holders are kind of on hold, but he's not going to do anything with the stock. So we don't know what's going to happen there. You know, remember he owns Golden, and he owns all the Golden Nugget casinos too, which were the original Steve Wynn property. So it's a very, some interesting times coming up as soon as, you know, with Wynn. But what they're building in UAE looks spectacular. They're going to be the only one open for a while. I don't know what's going on with MGM and what the other Emirates are doing with in terms of casinos yet. But Wynn's going to have the market on it there. And it'll be fascinating to see how it works, how, you know, gaming works in the United Arab Emirates. So.
Wynn's position, Wynn's sort of credo of we do high end, it's just going to fit right in there. That's the genius part of it, I think.
They did I was last year at the Formula One. They took a media through with the paddock area, the big building that they constructed that's the centerpiece of Formula One for the start finish line, all the suites. We went into the Wynn suite, and you would have thought it was like, you just walking back into Wynn Las Vegas. I mean, that's what it looked like in there. It's just, spectacular what they did in there. So it's
their brand identity is the strongest of any land-based gambling brand. I mean, it is. You know when you walk into a Wynn property.
Yeah, very true.
And you can't actually say that about any of the others because, of course, like MGM and Caesars, they own like 75% of the strip or whatever, but they've got these differentiated brands because they're different offerings. Whereas Wynn, like I say, they do their one thing and they do it really well.
But that's like branding. That's what good branding is.
It's like Snoopy watches, Fintan.
Just like Snoopy watches, right? You're known. It's like saying Chevy. Like what's name? There's so many cars under a brand. Or models under a brand, it gets a bit diluted and a bit confusing. But then you say Porsche, and there's a very clear picture in your head when you say Porsche.
Yeah, big question on the strip is how's Hard Rock going to do. You know, you know the old the former Mirage. It's the Guitar Tower is starting to come up on the Strip. You know, you can't really see the shape yet, but it's starting to. You know, it's rising up there where the volcano used to be. So it's coming on. I mean, they really. All that's left of the building is just the shell. It looks like when it was under construction back in 1988, when I was like a pup covering gaming for the Review Journal. It was just under construction then. It's everything's changed. They took out the atrium. They took everything out of there. So it's going to be a completely revamped property under Hard Rock and how it does.
That was something else.
Bringing up Elaine. The smartest thing Hard Rock did was she showed up for the closing, and she was very emotional, and it was just a great, tremendous speech. She talked about the employees, and she joked to me. She said her daughters used to say this is like the Mirage is our third sibling because you guys treat it like a child, and that's what they and so it was the smartest move that Hard Rock did was to bring Elaine in to let you know, and she basically. Gave her blessing to the closing of the Mirage.
Yeah, knock it down.
So
we do here.
But that's so, like, you know, Vegas is brilliant at reinventing itself. Like, we've had lots of people on. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he was testing food concepts. You know, this concept didn't work. We tried this concept, and then we found this one worked in this location with this audience, and that's kind of unheard of. When you like, if in the regular world, it's like, hey, I tried a restaurant, it failed, or I tried a restaurant and it worked. It's not like I tried three until I got it right in this location. So, but anyway, sorry. If we think of reinvention, okay, there's a new data point. July is a bit soft. Conventions are coming. There's a strong sporting calendar. You know, room bookings are looking good. What's your prediction looking forward for 2026? What do you feel it's going
to? I can't. You know, it's hard to predict because it's all. Depends on what happens in D.C., Washington. You know, if tariffs come up again, or there's like, you know, who knows what? That's you don't know from day to day. So that's what makes it hard to predict. Now, look, we don't have anything really opening in 2026 that's coming up. We have a state election. You know, politics here, but that doesn't really factor in. There's nothing really opening in 2026. It starts 2027. If Hard Rock opens, you know, in 2027, like their plan, and then you move forward to 2028, the baseball stadium is supposed to open on the Strip in the spring of 2028. The question is, what about the resort that's going to go around the baseball stadium? Bally's Corporation has the land, or has the lease on the land. It's owned by Gaming and Leisure Properties, one of the real estate investment trusts. Bally's has a myriad of issues going on. They haven't been able to build a Chicago casino. They're trying to build a casino in New York. We don't know what they're doing with the site. I mean, the stadium's
coming. I don't think they know either.
Yeah. Huh?
I don't think they know either.
Well, they don't. And I I'll tell you guys this. I mean, I don't mind saying this. I told one of the vice presidents of the A's, my prediction is when you guys open the stadium in 2028, Bally's will not be your casino partner. Be enough for a casino partner because the key to that site is Gaming and Leisure Properties, the real estate investment trust. Yeah. Peter Carlino Peter Carlino will figure it out. They will find another gaming partner if they have to. They will figure it out.
That's the thing, like Bally's, and I'm not dissing Bally's. You know, they're run by some rich dude, and I've got nothing, right? He's undoubtedly, because he has more money than me, is undoubtedly way smarter than me. However, they have quite clearly got no money. All the while there is nothing on that property, they are going to be paying through the nose the rent and any applicable rates, etc. So it's going to be an absolute drain.
Right.
There is no plan. There is no vision. There is no money to do anything. And I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, are the A's actually going to move there?
Well, the stadium's under construction. That's moving forward. And I think at this
point... I'll be Las Vegas League.
Well, I'll be honest. I was like one of the few media people that has been like 50-50 on this whole time, you know, about the A's. after seeing, listening to the commissioner of baseball, I mean, I think if the A's can't pull the trigger, they can bring another, they'll get another, Major League Baseball could take over and they can bring in another owner. There's plenty of owners around. And they, you know, they, plenty of people around that would help finance it, but they're going to take half, the, more than half the team away from the current owner, if that's the case, if that's what it come, boils down to. The other thing to look at is MGM Resorts. This is, they're not paying a nickel right now for the state, for anything to do with the stadium. And they're going to benefit off of it because they got 13,000 hotel rooms that surround that area.
Exactly.
All the parking, MGM, Bill Hornbuckle said straight out of the groundbreaking, everybody goes the same. They're going to park at our MGM properties like people do at Allegiant Stadium for when the Raiders play. They park at Mandalay Bay or Luxor and you or MGM, and you walk across, you walk over to it. That's what's going to happen with this baseball stadium. And that's MGM somehow, if Bally's can't pull the trigger, there will be another company involved. The A's can't pull the trigger. It's going to, something's going to happen where there'll be a different ownership. It's going to happen, I sense. It will be the Athletics, but who knows who, what shape or form the ownership will be and what shape or form the resort will be. That's, I think clearly the stadium's underway and I think it's going to happen. I don't, the last thing Vegas is going to, MGM is going to have is like an unfinished, you know, rusting building sitting across the street from them. You know, they're not, Bill Hornbuckle's not going to allow that. I guarantee you that.
Okay.
I'd like to see that. Listen, I went to the game. I just went to Sacramento, watched them play in a minor league park. The A's are going to play six regular season games in Las Vegas next year at the AAA ballpark. That's 5 minutes from my house. So I'm
nice.
and so it's going to be, there'll be, they're building up the fan base here for the move. So I think
that's good.
That'll happen.
It's happening. It'll happen.
Okay. If that is
Major League Soccer, then I'd really be happy. if we can get
that will happen.
Yeah. I want MLS. So
that will happen. Honestly, yeah. I do. I firmly believe that MLS will come to Las Vegas. There's but so many migrant workers in Las Vegas, so many Europeans, so many South Americans, and they're all football mad. You would have the most frantic, frenetic, mentalist support base.
Well, you see it happen when we play, when we have these I don't know, I want to call them exhibition games, but these games, friendlies that play at Allegiant Stadium. The problem was Allegiant Stadium wasn't built, they would have had to tear out a lot of the seating and reconfigure the floor if we were to get the World Cup. And so that's why Vegas didn't even bid on it. It wasn't configured correctly for to host the World Cup. So, but we'll still benefit from the World Cup. I'm not too worried about that.
Yeah, it's going to be big. It's going to be an England victory. Maybe not, but it is going to be big. Howard, that is all of my questions answered. Thank you very, very, very much for coming on again.
Always happy to come on. We're trying to expand our reach, you know, internationally. This helps to go across the pond.
Totally. And seriously, anybody in the gambling industry that's listening to this, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think that David Dance's addition to Las Vegas Review Journal has really improved their output. I think he's doing really good work.
He's a good, great guy. He really likes
him. He's good. And like I say, he's done some really, really good stories. And he's only been there 5 minutes, really. But if anybody out there is interested in what's going on in Vegas and the sort of broader perspective, honestly, what's the website? The website is just NevadaIndependent.com, isn't it?
Yeah, TheNevadaIndependent.com. Yeah.
TheNevadaIndependent.com. And you can sign up for newsletters. I get Howard's. And it's well worth it. And it's free.
Emailed out to you. The newsletter is emailed out every Wednesday, and then it's on the site about an hour later. So it's always there.
So you can get it early.
And then I'm heading up to Reno tomorrow to do some stuff up there and what's going on in Northern Nevada.
Fabulous. So catch up with Howard there, and thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Howard.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You can find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just at Gambling Files. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.